That was a big-time show of defense in the grain markets today. Wow. Wheat led the way to the downside, but corn and soybean futures were willing to follow wheat lower. And the buyers left the cattle complex and exited long positions before leaving. That pulled feeder cattle futures more than $5 lower.
Live from Five Below via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Brian Grady from Pro Farmer. Directly following the news, Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, so good. So good.
Really? Okay. Yeah. It's so good, so good, so good.
That's
Sweet
right.
Sweet Caroline, is that what you're quoting?
Dun, dun.
Man, you're getting the cyclone spirit. That's what's happening.
You know, you didn't mention the cyclones once this morning, and I'm very proud
right?
of you. You stayed very focused.
Why? I don't know why that would make you proud of me.
Hmm?
Why would that make you proud of me? Why why is it there's some sort of level of disappointment?
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. There is a cardinal and gold shiny object that just sort of enters our orbit every once in a while.
Yeah.
And when it does, you are like the Hubble telescope. You know what I mean? You are trained and focused and intently
zeroed
watching.
In. Yeah. Zeroed in.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any question about that. Man, it's that time of the year, dude.
Yeah,
can't
help
it.
That's what they say.
Can't help it. All right. We got Brian Grady today.
Yeah.
Pro Farmer just wrapped up their survey of acreage intentions. We're going to get the results of that going into Thursday's prospective planting report. We'll also talk about the quarterly grain stocks report. We got to figure out what's going on in this cattle trade. Good grief. Let's get to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Chip, the grain markets were on the defensive throughout the session with wheat futures posting double-digit losses. May soft red winter wheat futures opened to steady and near-session highs and closed near-session lows. Front-month SRW has support at the pivotal 540 level. State-level crop condition ratings showed general improvement in the hard red winter wheat crop over the past month, although Kansas crop conditions did tick slightly lower. July HRW wheat futures 11.5 cents lower, 574. July SRW wheat down 11.5 to 559.25. July spring wheat closed at 653.5, down 10.75 cents. Huh?
Just a sloppy day in the grain markets.
Yeah.
And wheat may have been the most sloppy of all. Really kind of opened the door to the downside for everything else.
Well, Chip, losses in wheat futures cleared the path to the downside for the corn market. The lack of immediate stress on the Brazilian Safrina corn crop has removed incentive to cover short positions, although the weather forecast does point to stress development in Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, and Rio Grande do Sul over the next 10 to 14 days. May corn futures opened slightly lower, rallied despite the pivotal 440 level, then pulled back to post the lowest close since March 6. May corn futures were 5.25 cents lower at 432.5. July corn down 6.25 to 445. December corn futures closed at 468. That's down 6.75 cents, Chip.
Knocking on support at the bottom of the sideways trading range. Better find some buyers tomorrow, or we could open up some additional downside risk.
Well, May soybean futures posted an inside trading day with an open near session highs and a close near session lows. The Brazilian bean harvest is into the final stages, and early crop season losses have mostly stabilized. Traders will be positioning ahead of Thursday's quarterly grain stocks and prospective plantings reports, and prices will likely remain locked in a sideways trading range ahead of that data. May beans were 10.25 cents lower at 11.99. July beans down 9.25 to 12.12.5. November beans closed at 11.91. That's down 7.75 today.
Yeah, that was a tough day through across the soy complex. We had the May bean meal down $1.90 and May bean oil down 60 points today as well.
July cotton showing some enthusiasm today, up 131 points to 93.86. On your livestock's long liquidation in live and feeder cattle futures became overwhelming, driving prices sharply lower. Cash cattle prices set an all-time high last week, and fat cattle auctions showed some follow-through strength yesterday, but a mission-accomplished attitude triggered profit-taking. April live cattle 310 lower today, 183.10. June futures off 3, 22.5, 178.37 and 1/2. And April feeder futures $1.72.5 lower, 247.72 and 1/2. And finally, Chip, April lean hogs 42.5 cents higher today, 85.57 and 1/2. The June contract was down 32.5 to close at 101.35. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. How you doing, Matt?
Doing good. How are you, bud?
I'm doing all right. Man, that was an ugly day in the grains. What'd you see happening?
Oh, terrible. You started out the day, and it looked like, surprisingly, after the overnight, it looked like we were going to maybe try to stage a little bit of buying action, but it just seemed like no buyers were there to show up. I mean, the interesting thing, of course, as you guys already talked about, is corn, beans, and wheat all down, and you look over at cattle, and it's even worse.
Oh, man.
So there just wasn't anything good going on today.
Yeah, and that cattle trade, you know, I said that, or Davis said that it was a kind of a mission accomplished trade. We talked about this earlier this, or end of last week, I guess. Once you make that all-time high in the cash trade, futures traders just kind of threw their hands in the air and said, that's it. That's all we needed to say. Right.
That's all we need to see. Yeah. And Brian, I talked to Brian a little bit after the close. He said, you know, June live cattle's got the monthly reversal going. So if we close below, I think it's 179.10 on Thursday, that seals the deal. So that's a little bit, a little concerning, I guess, in here. But I've said a lot here lately. In the mid to high 180s, how can you not be managing some risk here?
Right. Right. All right, let me hit a couple of buttons here. Well, let's see, what do we got going? Let's see if we can make this work.
Oh, here we go.
What do we got going here? A little Cyclone fight song there, buddy.
We need to be playing the Illini fight song.
Well, I don't know why we would do that.
Yeah, here's the deal. Here's the deal.
What do you got?
You guys got the number one defense. We got the number one offense.
Right.
And the winner gets to play UConn.
Yeah. So. Yeah. What kind of a trophy is that?
Exactly. I watched them play the other night. Holy buckets.
That's, I know it.
But I do think we're going to have one heck of a good game. I'm looking forward to it. And whoever wins Thursday, in my opinion, has got as good a shot at not knocking off UConn as anybody.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, you've already made the points that I was going to make. When you've got the defense playing the offense, and it, you know, I want to stress this about the offense. The way that the Illini looked coming through the Big Ten tournament, holy smokes. And then the beatdown that Iowa State put on Houston in the Big 12 tournament, I have no idea how this is going to end up, man.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's crazy though that they're playing them at 9:10 at night. I don't know.
They are tipping off in Boston at 10 after 10.
I know.
Why would you do that?
I have no clue.
You got old guys like me sitting out in the middle of the country thinking, "Let's get this game started at like 5."
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
And the thing is whichever one of us loses, we're not going to get any sleep.
that's exactly right.
Winner might not either.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
dude, I'm going to say good luck to you, buddy.
Later, buddy. Bye.
Go Cyclones. All right. That's Matt Bennett. Turn him off. Turn him off. That's Matt Bennett, agmarket.net. Great observations on the markets, and of course, that game that we've got coming up Thursday between Iowa State and Illinois. Brian Grady is next.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Oh, let's bring him in right away. Brian Grady, editor, Pro Farmer. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, Chip. Thanks.
Good. Matt Bennett was just on here. We had a little bit of basketball talk.
Yeah, I can imagine. Which games did you talk about? Probably.
No, what we talked about was the Iowa State-UConn game coming up this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. I'm gonna have to check you.
That's
there,
some
Chip.
Confidence.
Let me check that.
What Matt said is exactly right. You got the number one offense against the number one defense, and the winner of that game gets UConn.
Yeah. Well,
what kind of a prize is that?
No, probably not the greatest prize based on the way UConn's been playing, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, people, you know, people, there have been Cyclone fans, and I'm going to give a little, you know, tough love out to the Cyclone fans that were complaining about the draw that Iowa State got, or the seed that Iowa State got. You got to beat them all anyway. If you're going to end up on top, you got to beat them all anyway. The goal of the tournament is not to have an easy path. The goal of the tournament is win your last damn game.
Absolutely. 6-0.
6-0, baby. 6-0. That's what the Cyclones are shooting for this year. And I don't know if they can get it or not. And I don't know, if you can, in the game against Illinois, that's an unbelievably tough game leading into the toughest matchup, I would think, for anybody, any other team that's in the tournament. So, I don't know. You got to beat them all. You got to go 6-0. So,
yep.
See how it goes.
How they defend Terrence Shannon Jr., and I would make Marcus Damask. He's a great player. I'd make him dribble. Yeah. So, you know, Iowa State's guards, they're pretty darn good on the ball. But they'll trap the hell out of it out at the on the perimeter, and they'll force you to go baseline and double that on the inside. And I would drive the middle myself. But,
yep.
I'm not a basketball coach, so
that's how teams have had success against Iowa State.
Yeah, you got to go right down the lane.
You got to play that middle third of the court. Yeah. If you play the right or the left third of the court, you're asking for trouble against that defense is the bottom line. So yeah, you know, you're exactly right. You got to play them right down the middle. So and. The offense, the Illini offense, it's easy to say this, but really difficult to do with the athletes that they put out there on the floor. But if Iowa State can beat Illinois on points in the paint, they might win the game. They might win the game. So. Yeah, but you gotta limit Illinois' points in the paint. That's the problem.
Yeah. So, and then Terrence Shannon Jr., if he gets going, then he's downhill, and then when you back off, he just shoots the jumper over you. So.
Right, right.
He's a pro. But so is Momcilovic for Iowa State. He's a pro on offense. I would drive that guy hard. Make him play defense. Because he's out there for his offense.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right. Okay. Speaking of defense, Grain stunk today.
Yeah. They weren't as bad as cattle. I mean, no. Cattle really stunk. But.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the cattle trade, I think it's almost a mission accomplished trade here now, isn't it, Brian? The market has done what everybody expected it to do. Now the futures can kind of trade on their own away from the cash market, right?
Yeah, and you know I was looking back in the last when we hit the previous record high back in June of last year. Mm-hmm. That next week the cash dropped like $4. So almost $4, and we might see a repeat of that this week based on what the futures are doing. So interesting how history kind of repeats itself some of those times, but you get the all-time high and then you're going to back off pretty significantly.
Right. Okay. Before we talk too much about what's going on in the grain markets leading up to the quarterly grain stocks report and the prospective plantings report, you wrapped up the pro farmer planted acreage intentions survey last week and had the results in the Pro Farmer newsletter last weekend. What'd you find out on corn?
91.75 million acres. So we do, we get back responses and then we have to do analysis of it. So we have to scrub the responses. Some aren't, they're not accurate. We can, you can discount some of them right away. But we had a high number of accurate responses or what appeared to be accurate responses. And then you do analysis on it and 91.75 million acres is what it told us. So that'd be down 2.9 million acres, 3.1% from a year ago. So probably not too much of a surprise. That's pretty close, actually, to what the average trade estimate is from the Reuters survey. So, we're probably not all right on average, mm-hmm. but, there are some bigger ones, obviously, at 93.5 million in the Reuters poll down to 90 million. But we just happen to fall right in about the average location there.
Now, of the respondents to the Pro Farmer survey, what percentage was down from a year ago on corn acres?
So 56%, so more than half, and that's not surprising. I mean, and the number one factor is crop rotation. It always is. I mean, people talk in the marketplace about, the price ratios and this and that and price action and blah, blah, blah. And it's crop rotation. I mean, you know that year in and year out, that's the number one factor. That doesn't mean that those other factors don't come into play, but they come into play on a much smaller portion of the acreage, especially in the central corn belt. And so when you're talking about the bulk of your high production areas, crop rotation is by far and away the number one factor.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. But in your survey, you found that states, east of the Mississippi, if I'm remembering correctly, states east of the Mississippi are looking at the sharpest drop in corn acres, right?
Yeah, 4 to 5% basically in the eastern corn belt there. Okay. Increase in the Dakotas, probably not too surprising. They had a rough start to spring last year, and it pushed back their plantings. And so down pretty significantly, especially in North Dakota up pretty significantly in North Dakota from a year ago.
Okay. Any other regional observations on on corn acres?
No, just in general, the Corn Belt is going to have less corn acres and less productive acres elsewhere around the country are going into corn. Potential yield drag depending, regardless of weather, and we'll see how it plays out. Now, if those areas have just supreme weather, they can offset that. But, the higher yielding corn areas are going to plant less corn, and some of those other areas won't see quite as much decline or even some increases.
Okay. Okay, take us over to beans.
86.75 million acres, so that would be up 3.15 million or 3.8%. So kind of an offset, pretty much an offset corn and soybeans there year to year. And if you remember back to last year, the corn plantings were up much more than anticipated when it came to June acreage, and the soybeans were basically flat. And so to see that kind of movement, up almost 4% in soybeans and down a little bit more than 3% in corn probably isn't too surprising there. I guess we like to look at the combined corn and soybean acres and 178.5 million on those two, that would be down 900,000 acres, 0.5%. So, just a marginal decline in the two.
I was going to say, do you like the 178.5?
I do. And historically, our survey has been really close on the combined acres. Actually, we've been pretty close on corn and soybeans over the years. That doesn't mean we haven't had some misses, but on average, we've been pretty close. And the total combined has been really close during the past 10 years.
Okay. On the bean acres, the percent of survey respondents increasing acres?
59, so a little bit stronger even than what the corn acres was on decreases. So, I think that pretty clear indication that, when you get upwards of almost two-thirds that tell us they're going to increase their soybean plantings, definitely there will be a notable increase.
Right, and regionally, if you're down on corn east of the Mississippi, up on beans east of the Mississippi?
Yeah, absolutely, 8 to 9%. Pretty notable.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay, we've got some other acreage results that we need to get through. We've got spring wheat. Want to take a look at cotton? We got to do those for sure. Some of the other alternative crops out there as well. We are talking acreage and planting intentions with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady right here on AgriTalk.
Let's go to the markets page at profarmer.com and check today's closes, where July HRW wheat futures were 11.5 cents lower at 574. July SRW wheat down 11.5 cents to 559.25. May corn futures 5.25 cents lower, 432.5. December corn futures closed at 468. That's down 6.75 on the day. May soybean futures 10.25 cents lower at 11.99. November beans closed at 11.91. That's down 7.75 on the day. July cotton up 131 points to 93.86. On your livestocks, April fat cattle were $3.10 lower, 183.10. April feeders off $1.72.5, 247.72.5. April lean hog futures 42.5 cents higher, all told, to close at 85.57.5. Try ProFarmer.com. Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
The Prospective Plantings Report is coming up on Thursday, 11 o'clock Central Time, Thursday morning. We are getting ready for that. We are talking with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. 91.75 million corn acres. That's what the Pro Farmer survey suggested. 86.75 million acres planted to soybeans. Brian, let's move on to some of the other crops. Go up to the Northern Plains. What did the survey tell you about spring wheat?
Well, going to be down about 1.6% overall. So other spring wheat down about 2.7% and Durham acres up 5.9%. So, you know, obviously the other spring wheat acreage is much greater than the, the Durham. But, you know, that's what we're looking at. 10.9 million acres of other spring wheat, 1.775 million acres of Durham.
Yeah. Okay. Combined with some of the numbers that we've seen coming out of Canada, it doesn't feel like it's a lot, like that's enough of a shift to make a big difference on the outlook for the wheat market.
No, and really it matches up very well with Stats Canada, what they came up with for the Canadian planting. So, you know, spring wheat down and Durham up. So.
Right. Okay. All right, let's go to cotton, because there's been a lot of talk that this cotton market is trying to at least hold on to more acres. With the some of the price strength that we've seen this winter, did the survey indicate that is going to happen?
Yeah, actually, we came back at 10.5 million acres there, so that would be up 2.6%. Now that runs completely counter to what the National Cotton Council found, and let's be honest here, the Pro Farmer survey, we don't have nearly as many cotton producers that we survey as what National Cotton Council does, so they are by far and away a better expert on that surveying of cotton acres than what we are. The difference is their survey was from mid-December to mid-January, and ours concluded in mid-March. And so there was quite a bit of upward price movement in the cotton market. Now, the bulk of that came in old crop futures, but not as much in new crop futures. But there was still a pull from the market to increase your cotton acres, or at least not decrease them as much. And like I said, our survey found that they would actually be up about 2.6%.
Yeah, and just as important on the old crop versus the new crop move, soybeans and corn were doing nothing to take acres in the South when cotton was trying to get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the clear market signal to those producers, and I talked about the central corn belt where the crop rotations are the biggest deal by far. When you get outside of the corn belt especially into the south, that isn't necessarily the case. And so you will see more movement. One, their acres aren't as big as what corn and soybeans are overall, and by any means. So you're working with a much smaller acreage base on cotton and some of the other crops down there. But they have a tendency to move around more on a year-to-year basis.
Okay. Let's see. Sorghum. I know you had a sorghum number in there, right?
Absolutely. And that one's an important one, especially where it's grown in the plains and drought impacts and stuff like that. But we had 7.6 million acres planted, and that would be up 5.6% from last year. So just over 400,000 acres increase there. And pretty much across the plains from Texas all the way up to South Dakota indicated that there would be more sorghum acres planted this year. So I anticipate that that is at least the trend. We'll see what the actual number is come Thursday.
Yeah, up 400,000 from a year ago. But it's hard to tell exactly if sorghum's taken spring wheat or corn or soybeans or cotton. It's probably a combination of all of them.
Yeah, I think it is, and you mentioned cotton. So, it used to be that cotton didn't get much north of Texas. Now they do produce some of that in Oklahoma and even up into Kansas, and so there's a little bit greater variety there. As you get up into South Dakota and stuff, then you get into sunflowers and some of the other things that canola, these types, barley, that type of stuff.
Yeah, now that since you mentioned those other crops, what did the guys up in the Northern Plains indicate? Is there some lean to those alternative crops?
They would lean to canola instead of sunflowers in the northern plains. Barley is expected to be down, and so that's kind of what we're looking at in general. Now there's quite a few minor crops up in that area, and so we don't get enough survey responses on some of those minor crops to give much of a direction. But canola and sunflowers and barley, yes. In the south, rice. We do get a little bit of sampling of rice, not nearly as much as we do on cotton, but like peanuts and stuff like that. No, we don't get enough responses back to have it be a legitimate sample.
Okay. So when everything is said and done, you like that 178.5 combined on corn and soybean acres. Exactly what makes up that 178.5? It might be close to this 91, let's see, 91.75 and 86.75. But if it moves a half a million acres on each of those crops, it's not going to surprise you much.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't, and even a million acres or so, so if corn goes up from what we projected, soybeans are probably going to go down about the same amount, and if corn drops more than what we projected, then soybeans are probably going to go up a like amount there.
What does it take to get a quote unquote bullish or even price friendly corn number?
Well, I'll just use the Reuters survey here. 91.8 million acres basically is what they're looking at for corn, and 86.5 million acres for soybeans. Bullish, you're probably going to need to lop a million and a half off those averages for either of them to get much of a price response. And to be honest with you, if we do get a big market move on Thursday, it's probably more likely to come from the quarterly grain stocks report than it would be from acreage. If anything, the acreage may be bearish, and the quarterly stocks would have to provide a bullish surprise, in my
You know,
opinion.
normally, if there was going to be I shouldn't say normally. In the past, leading into the March 1 quarterly grain stocks report, if there was a surprise brewing, there would be some indication of it showing up in basis for corn and for soybeans, even on a regional level. And I've been looking for that indication, Brian. I'm just not seeing it this year.
Yeah, no, not a whole lot there. And part of that is that, we started out, I guess, okay on soybean exports, and they've really backed off on a seasonal basis and just really just nothing to write home about right at the moment. Corn has been very steady on the exports, but nothing too spectacular. I mean, we continue to pump out these weeks of over 1 million tons of sales, but nothing that's really like big and attention grabbing. And right. So the market's kind of just got used to it. But you're absolutely right. From a basis perspective, is there a pull there in any one of those markets? And not really, right, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not seeing anything that would indicate there's an area of the Corn Belt or area of the plains, the cattle country, saying that we're short on supplies. It may show up in the report, but I'm not seeing it at this point. What else are you watching right now? Is it still, let's finish up the Safrina corn crop?
Yeah, I think that one from a corn perspective has the opportunity to maybe give us some price support. Let's be honest, if their weather's a train wreck into the end of the growing season, they're going to see their Safrina production decline pretty significantly. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then obviously as we get into the U.S. planting season and talking about that, what's the weather do? We have some areas that need some moisture in the spring. And do we have a quick planting season? Do we get some of the moisture that we need, and it maybe slows down planting a little bit and those types of things? And then as we transition into summertime, does the La Nina phenomenon reappear, and do we transition quickly from El Nino to La Nina? And if that's the case, we're probably looking at a hotter and drier summer. So I think that, Brazilian weather for the Safrina corn, U.S. planting season, and then La Nina as we move through the summer.
Yeah. After last year, the corn crop's going to have to be dead if the market's going to respond, right?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest hurdle right now.
Yeah.
It is convincing the market that there's any kind of issues. So, with that in mind, maybe there, let's say La Nina does develop and we do have some issues and the market doesn't react to it. It's going to be frustrating for farmers. But at some point in time, if there are problems, the market will find out. It may just take longer than normal because of what's happened not only last year, but the past 5-6 years here.
Yeah, that's right. Good stuff, buddy. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. All right. That is Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer. Okay. We need to wrap up today's second hour of AgriTalk. Davis and I will do that next.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
I ain't as good as I once was.
We miss you, Toby.
Yes, we do.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, here with Chip Flory.
Yep.
Basketball season, Chip. I want to run something by you. I want to run something by you here, because I know that you're an Iowa State guy.
Yes.
Brass tacks, pick one team. You're a Cyclone. Through and through. Right.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
You bleed red.
Yes, I do.
That kind of makes a guy think.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, I know that you've been very excited for Caitlin Clark's success. On the Hawkeye squad. And
yeah, absolutely.
Deservedly so. She's remarkable. It's outstanding. It's been terrific for those who watched.
Yeah.
A rising star on the Lady Cyclones, though.
Oh, yeah. Audie Crooks.
Did I miss this yesterday talking about Audie Crooks and the stat that kills me? Now, they're out of the tournament now, right? They got knocked out in the second round. Is that right?
Got knocked out in the round of 32 by Stanford, playing on Stanford's court in overtime.
But against Maryland in the previous game, this Audie Crooks, listen to this, Crooks joined Bill Walton as the only players in NCAA tournament history to score 40 points on at least 90% shooting.
Yeah, she
Walton
was
did it for UCLA
20.
In 73. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, Crooks was 18 of 20. She had a much tougher time against Stanford. Did not shoot nearly as well. I don't think she made half her shots. But the defense and the amount of fouling that took place in that, Brinks fouled out for Stanford. And I don't know how many times she has done that this year, but it doesn't seem like it's happened very often. The other post player for Stanford had four fouls too. So they had their hands full with her. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, Audie Crooks.
She's a freshman.
She's a freshman. Yeah. Addie Brown's a freshman. Jackson's a freshman. Another Jones girl is a freshman. Bristow, I think I got that right, is a freshman. Oh, it's just, and they're all contributing.
Yeah, sounds like big things ahead for the Lady Cyclones.
I hope so. Well, and you know, Iowa had to show up last night. There is no question about it. That West Virginia team was doggone tough, very physical, and Iowa found a way to win a game that was outside of what you would expect that Iowa team to play, which is only going to make them stronger.
Yeah.
That's it, boy, it's high hopes for that Iowa team the rest of the way.
Yeah, indeed. Well, good luck, gals. We appreciate you. 91.75 million acres to corn. Okay, that's not an eye-popping number. What was interesting that Brian Grady, editor of Pro Farmer, brought out in today's conversation was where those acres are and how those soil types, conditions, average yield scores may impact the national yield in a negative way, ultimately.
Yep. He's absolutely right. It sounds like there's a but in there, and here it is.
Okay.
But the acres in the South that maybe picked up some corn, those guys have proven that they can grow corn.
Absolutely, they have.
North Dakota.
I think of Mississippi to start with. Yeah.
North Dakota, South Dakota. On average, yes, they are below the national average yield. But you give them the right conditions, give them, even normal conditions.
Yeah.
And North Dakota and South Dakota could have a year fairly easily in which they are helping to pull up the national average yield. When that happens, we're going to set a record yield. I get that. But Brian's absolutely right. The movement of the acres would suggest that it will be a drag on the national average corn yield this year. Yes.
The other thing that he mentioned, he was anxious to talk about the cattle market.
Yeah.
He brought it up. Yep. The cash cattle market to follow futures on a downswing here. I should probably pull up my chart before I start talking about numbers, but October cattle now, the 190 is down to 179.62 and a half as of the close, down $3.52 and a half on the day. Should we have waited for 190 there in the oct?
No, I mean,
and that's what you said at the time too. Well, you can wait there, but were we at 187 and change at that point? How much closer do you need to be? Was the question you raised, exactly. And now here we sit at 179.
Yeah,
how do you like me now?
You cannot get more bullish as the market goes up, And that applies to corn, that applies to cattle. And with the market trading as close to the all-time highs as it was, there's a lot more downside risk than there is upside potential when you're trading close to the highs.
Air gets thin up there.
Very thin. There's no question about it. So, no. Some put options or something needed to be done before this sell-off here. And I don't know if a lot of people got the coverage in place, and I hope that they did. But, you know, and I'm not saying that it's too late. The puts are going to be gaining in value as this market goes down. But coverage against a real sell-off still may be warranted in here, no question about it. Been waiting for the 6 to 10 day to update for us. Not going to do it. It's not going to do it for us. No.
I got it.
Do you? Hit it.
Near normal temps around the middle, dry western belt, wetter on the out to the east in the 6 to 10 day. That's about it. Yeah.
Very good. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow morning, we got Emily Score from Growth Energy and the Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk.